Welcome to Thundercast, ThunderTech's podcast where we give you our take on what's new in marketing, what's cool, what's lame, and why you should care.
Hi, and welcome to Thundercast, ThunderTech's regular podcast. I'm Craig Israel, creative director, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host,
Eric Krylo from the account services team.
We have an exciting show today. Not only will it be Eric and I, we have two special guests that we will introduce in a moment. Today, we're going to be talking about the changing landscape of media from a marketing perspective, and we'll also be talking about hot topic in the media right now, ad blocking.
Not to be confused with the store hot topic, which is, I know, one of your favorites, Craig.
It is, obviously. To cover some of those topics today, we have two guest hosts. I'll let them introduce themselves.
Hi, JP Cranes, media specialist here at ThunderTech. Happy to be here.
Happy to have you, JP. And?
Jason Therian, president of ThunderTech. Also very pleased to be here.
Well, it is the place to be.
I've been following you guys for quite some time. Glad to get the invite.
Heard good things. So before we get into the topic, full disclosure, Eric, I'm fighting a little bit of a bug. I have a little tickle in my throat. I'm trying to use a branded lozenge to help not hack up a lung during the show.
Yeah, I was wondering what all the Halls wrappers were both in your beard and also all over your clothing.
I know. It's not just for breakfast anymore.
Your beard?
So I'm going to rely on Matt to cut out anything that sounds really terrible. All right, Matt is shaking his head now, so thanks for that support.
Matt.
Appreciate it. Okay, so let's get into the topic. Let's start talking about media. I will throw it right to JP. What do you think about the situation of media buying and strategy in the marketing world today?
Wow, that's a loaded question for 2016, right? We have a lot of factors that are playing into the media buying universe right now. A lot of different what we call content substitutions. So folks are watching on multiple screens. They're watching broadcast channels. They're watching cable channels. They're watching online only channels. From a marketer's perspective, it's really hard to sort of pin down where your audience is because it's so fragmented. Across the spectrum. So there's a lot of choices and a lot of different measurement vehicles out there to target folks. But I feel like it's our job at some point to educate the audience on what's exactly out there and then try to come up with a plan to make it work for them.
So as a marketer, where do you even start? If you're looking for that golden 18 to 40 demographic that all advertisers seem to covet, and it's spread across 100 different channels, how do you even steer a customer, a client, in the right direction?
You know, part of it is having a good conversation with them and you know, kind of up your alley is having really good creative that speaks to the medium. So in the past, you may create a 30-second TV commercial. And that TV commercial just ran. And someone would say, hey, did you see that Toyota commercial? And you'd be like, yeah. And then that would kind of be it, right? So maybe you were considering buying a car, maybe you weren't. But you kind of never knew what drove you to the showroom. So in this case, we'd like to look at that demo that you proposed, 18 to 49, and then try to pick content mediums that sort of push to one end of the spectrum or the other.
So speaking of content mediums, and I you definitely bring up an interesting point, and going into, I think, 2016, it's no secret that the amount of mediums, as you mentioned before, is growing. But in your mind, what are the ones that are going to have the most activity in terms of mediums to watch, at least early on in 2016?
So, we've heard a lot about, you know, Hulu and Amazon Prime and Netflix in general. And you know, we were doing some research on some of that, and maybe you've seen the article where NBC Universal kind of threw the code of secrecy on some of the Netflix programming. and found that their big show, Orange Is the New Black, had 644,000.
So the thing here is viewers. That Netflix won't release any of its ratings.
Correct.
I mean, they clearly know who's watching and when, but they keep that information proprietary.
Right. And if I'm NBC in this example, I feel like, well, if you're providing content in TV shows and we're measured on it, why can't you, right? Because everyone says, well, Netflix is out and Hulu is there. And what about NBC? You know, poor little NBC or CBS or, those folks. And so he kind of pulled that cover off and found how many viewers they had and then compared it to what they have in terms of offerings. And the interesting part about that is he's right that the broadcasters are still doing really well, almost 2-to-1 in terms of audience on certain shows.
Well, on the stats released, right? Netflix, full disclosure, they claim that their metrics are way off.
Right. So but it's the only metric that we have, right? So it's kind of that discussion topic. Well, you won't give it to us, but here's what we found, and feel free to refute it.
We should assume that if the findings were Netflix show are beating broadcast TV 5-1,
exactly.
Netflix might be a little more willing to come out and agree on
that. That's correct. But the key thing that sort of grabbed our attention is the quote from NBC Universal when they sort of revealed these metrics, is that viewers who watch SVOD shows, so season video on demand, Netflix releases all the shows so that you can watch them whenever you want, return to their old viewing habits by the third week. By then, people are watching TV the way that God intended.
And on the eighth day, God created network television.
That's right.
I'm here to tell you, Henry, this stuff will never catch on.
And he continues, that is via traditional linear viewing. The impact goes away. And for me, I kind of took a step back and say, well, how are you so easily dismissing something that gets 644,000 viewers a week for their shows? Maybe it's not as much as you, but I think there's a trap that you can fall into to basically say, they're just Netflix. Let's just, they're okay, but you don't need them right now. Just stick with us, right? We're the horses that are going to take you over the line.
So let me make sure I understand this. So is he saying that viewers, they binge watch whatever Netflix show they have till completion, and then they go back and watch normal episodic broadcast TV?
Right, and that's what he's sort of getting at, right? So maybe it's a minor blip in maybe the viewing habits that you have, right? So you sit down for a weekend, you watch all the shows, and then all of a sudden you're like, all right, I'll watch Blue Bloods every week for 20 weeks.
I mean, Tom Selleck's mustache could make me do a lot of things, but I don't think it's going to make me want to watch Blue Bloods.
I mean,
but the question that I have for you, JP, is do you feel as though, and going along the same lines of trying to figure out what this quote actually means, is he trying to neg a little bit on Netflix, so put them down using stats in order to sort of continue to push the idea that network television will always reign supreme? Or is it really a situation like Craig brought up where folks are truly binge-watching something and then going back to network TV? And if it is the latter, wouldn't a service like network, like Hulu, which essentially shows almost every network show after it airs, wouldn't that be a better platform because there's less commercials than what exists currently on network TV?
Well, I think in his mind, he's sort of validating the old traditional route. Right. And then so as marketers, we look at that and say, OK, there's still some validity there. Right. It's not, well, Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime are there, and therefore, CBS is going down tomorrow. Right. So from a local perspective, it's part of the education we can give clients to say, listen, you want to be on the news, Channel 5 at 6 o'clock because you have a product that really hits them. It's still a good place to be. Maybe you don't throw every single penny you have into it. But there's other options, but this is not dead, and by no means is sort of the rumors and the buzz that come around those platforms sort of stealing away every last bit of user engagement on those traditional channels. Yeah. Now, to your point on like Hulu and things like that, I think you have to be careful not to go the other way and just go, I'm taking my $100,000 and I'm throwing it all into Hulu because that's where people are. That could also be dangerous too, because you're just not sort of sharing that information, where we've seen on the network side and cable television side a good engagement with viewers still tuning into those shows. So it's kind of both sides of it, right? One's trying to protect, and the other one's trying to gain. And how do we sort of educate clients on where to go?
But this isn't just TV, right?
This
is the hype problem.
Right. So I mentioned it sort of earlier, and it's the whole substitutes for content, right? So just because I watch NBC doesn't mean that I also don't watch ABC, right? So that's sort of the traditional path of someone saying, well, I don't watch three, I watch five. Well, that's fine, but now it's, I don't watch three, I watch something on my phone from YouTube, right? Or I watch something on YouTube and I watch channel three, and then my wife watched channel five in the other room. Well, now we're three screens in the same house viewing three different substitutes, if you will, for each other.
At the same time.
At the same time, of content. And that's what's really sort of difficult to kind of, you know, piece together. But it's radio, it's television, it's online shows, it's anything that sort of grabs my attention can be that substitute for traditional television show or commercial ran content.
So for, you know, and you bring up a lot of interesting points, and one of the things that I continue to hear being echoed is, you know, for lack of better saying here, don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Oh, mm-hmm. Did you make that up?
Well, it sounds
new to me.
I had a dream last night where I was on an Easter egg hunt.
I'm using that.
And I was dressed like a rabbit, and that's kind of where that came from. But anyways, as far as that goes, JP, you know, given that we work with clients, do a lot of media buying on behalf of clients, how do we help them feel comfortable, and how do we educate them on what's the proper mix? For, you know, if they're either entering, you know, the media for the first time, or if this is something that they've been doing for a while.
Right. So I really feel that when you have any sort of content out there, I want to have something that tracks it back to a conversion point. For example, if we choose Pandora for a client, I'd really like folks to sort of lean on the medium and say, hey, Pandora listener, enter promo code SURF at checkout. And then, right, so it seems like, hey, I've got a different code, it gets me some money off or something like that. But then as the client, I can go back and say, hey, we ran this ad and you know, we drove 20 conversions that got us $10,000 worth of business. That to me is a really good way to sort of validate some of the media that we do, right? Because I get there's a branding level where you gotta let folks know that you exist and be part of the consideration group. But from there, how can you sort of funnel users back into this conversion point so that we can put some return on marketing investment back into their marketing budget so that hopefully they ask for more money from their bosses and CEOs so that we can keep proving that.
And we keep seeing that, right? That clients are looking for more actionable numbers. The days of saying that we delivered 100,000 impressions overnight just doesn't cut it anymore.
Right. And you know, traditionally, big companies like Honda, right, they run those massive brand campaigns, and there's really nothing other than to say, hey, the new Accord is out. They don't mention any dealers or where to buy it or what to search for online. But in order to back that up, they do, you know, multi-tens of thousand-dollar market research and focus groups to see if their brand voice has lifted based on a small percentage of folks, and then they extrapolate that over the entire nation. Well, if I'm just regular car dealer here, I don't have those kind of budgets to, you know, throw a brand out there and say, well, let me run this 50-person focus group and then see what the results are and so on and so forth all the way down the line, right? So you gotta have those smaller conversion points and then say, this seemed to work for us this time, let's maybe throw more money to it piece by piece.
So do you think that Craig's point that because more is measurable and more needs to be actionable to some degree, especially at the local or regional level, that we're moving more towards direct response advertising?
Yeah, I mean, I really feel that people want to be talked to on a one-to-one basis. You know, gone are the days of just throwing out one message and be like, well, we hit what we hit, you know, kind of pull the net up, and whoever's in the net, then we're good. Right. Folks want to be, you know, focused and targeted on demand. And if we can focus that message, there's little waste and then more conversions for the client. So yeah, I definitely think that's the way to go.
So in terms of something else that's changing on the media landscape are digital ads that we're all accustomed to, banner ads that we see on websites, but you know, from very simple beginnings, they've become extremely sophisticated in the last couple of years. And also something that's becoming very sophisticated is how people block those advertisements from being seen. As a little paid advertisement, this is a topic that we are covered, that we've covered extensively in our latest trends book, which is available now online. You can find it at thunderdeck.com/trends, available for free digital download, or you can drop us an email and we'll send you a beautiful full color print version as well. I know it's on my bedside reader as it is yours, Eric. I know.
It's actually glued to my forehead as we speak.
I thought you looked different.
I just missed it.
I didn't know what that was.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about digital ads and ad blocking, because that seems to be the hot topic of the moment.
Yeah, so this was interesting when we were paring down our list of trends that we started getting a little more questions from clients on this. But we thought, all right, let's get ahead of it, because there are clients, like JP says, that we do a lot of digital spend with. And most of the time, it's a mix with traditional and digital spends. So this question is going to come up more. The numbers were first reported, and I think there was a lot of hype around them. And that was the whole, reason for the articles about the ad block boogeyman. Is it real or not? And it is real. It's out there. The numbers are really interesting. Some of the data that first came out when this started taking off last year, going all the way back to September, so you assume these numbers are higher, was that about 200 million people now block digital ads, which is about 7%. Of the 2.8 billion humans online. 7%, it's a number that can catch your attention. I don't think you should be freaking out about it.
Yeah, I agree.
But one of the reasons we put the article in from a trend perspective was that 200 million people that was reported here was up from 30 million. That's a big jump. Just in a couple of years, that was 30 million 4 years ago, we're using ad blockers. And the point in the article we got into is that, like, ad blocking's not really that new. We had TiVo and the DVR, and we've been fast-forwarding broadcast now.
Pop-up blocker has been a thing.
Absolutely.
Built into the browsers now. You don't have to an add-on or anything.
Great.
Right there.
Absolutely. So, where it goes, we're going to find out. I think there's a lot of excuses out there why this is going the way it's going, and we'll see.
To kind of build on that, we talked about how consumers are looking for one-on-one experiences, and now they're basically saying, I don't want to be advertised to, right? So in the past, you would run your ad, and you heard it whether you wanted to hear it or not, right? Because it was on your show, and you didn't have TiVo, you didn't have DVR, you just had to sit there and watch it. But now the user's saying, well, I don't want to be marketed to. If I want something, I'll go find you. And that's sort of a trend that we've been seeing, but it's kind of just flipping everything around.
Flip the funnel.
That's right.
Well, I've seen some interesting commentary on it. As a marketer, it's easy to say, the sky's falling, people are blocking our advertisements, they're not getting through. Our clients aren't spending their money wisely. But you can look at it a different way, is why would you waste your money trying to reach clients or prospects that clearly don't want your message?
Absolutely.
Right? This is no different than saying Bernie Sanders advertising on Fox News, right? The audience isn't receptive to the message. So maybe we try to keep this podcast topical.
Hey, all right.
So I think that's an interesting way to look at it, is ad blocking isn't necessarily a bad thing. It can be a healthy thing. It forces you to be more creative with your ad spend, and the clients, the prospects that you do reach are going to be more receptive to the message.
Well, that was another portion of the article that, first, I believe that there's a lot of lazy ad placement out there. Right, you're looking for just the top line numbers. You're looking for impressions, because you're not being held accountable for that direct response in terms of what the metrics are. So you know what? We can go get eyeballs anywhere. Let's just jam it down everyone's throat digitally. So why would anyone on Fox News want to see Bernie Sanders? Perhaps, hey, if it delivered an eyeball, some media buyers, that's what they're going to report on.
Right. And the power of large numbers comes into play here too. From a trend perspective, I'm tied, and I'm seeing, 7% of folks blocking their ads. 7% of, $100 million ad spend, Tide's going, where's my money going here? Right. Like, is this big deal, right? 7% of $1,000 is like, well, we could sort of shuffle them along and we'll be fine. But, right. You know, you gotta think about that larger landscape of how many digital ads are out there across everyone's unique experience. It can add up quickly.
And I think advertisers have also brought this on themselves besides the actual, you know, lazy spend. It's also sometimes the overuse of the data. Just because you can follow somebody around because they looked at your pair of shoes or your whatever you're selling and you retarget them, you shouldn't follow them around for 90 days every single day.
Right.
And it's the only ad they see.
Yeah.
That's how restraining orders happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to that point, I personally was looking at a snow thrower. Yeah, I like thrower instead of blower, but
it's a lot stronger than blower.
Yeah. So I was looking for that part, right? And browsing online and it's like, yeah, I remember doing that. And then eventually I thought about it on a Saturday and then I just went and bought it. But wouldn't you know, that snowblower part stuck with me for 3 more months or 2 more months as it was, you know, 60 degrees outside after winter. It's like, well,
just wasteful.
Do I need this? Yeah, I don't think I need this anymore, right? No. And you know, they give you options, but you have to go in there and say, I've already bought this product or I don't want to see this product anymore.
Why would you do that?
But no, who's doing that? Unless you're in the business like we are to know that that's an option. I know if my mom's seeing that thing, she's not like, oh, let me press this little blue triangle up there. And
next ad, please.
That's right, yeah. So, I mean, there's parts of that. So there's just, you know, you have to be smart about it, but that one-on-one experience can have some of those sort of wasteful drawbacks.
Craig, there's also been an argument about creative is at blame here. And I'm on the fence. I think there's a lot of, especially in the digital realm, there's not always the best display creative. But I don't think that's why people are blocking ads. If the creative were better, that they would enjoy them more. I mean, what's your take on it?
I think it's hard to make the argument that something that people don't like out of hand advertisements, you know, in the digital space are made more enjoyable just because the creative is more colorful, more engaging, more attractive. Now that said, we've seen some really clever executions that stand out because the creative cuts through the clutter. And I think the top of mind example is Geico, right? We covered this, and I think in our last podcast, talking about some of the best ads of 2015. So Geico did that ad where this ad's unskippable because it's already over, and it's
fantastic.
It's 30 seconds of a dog eating spaghetti, which it sounds stupid, but it was fantastic.
And they did it first, right? Got your attention. Right. No one else can do it now.
So, I mean, I'm a firm believer that creativity can solve a lot of problems, and I think creative definitely plays a part here, but I don't think you can look at the online ad industry and say reason people are blocking ads is because the creative is weak, right? That would be saying like the reason people are fast forwarding through ads on broadcast TV is because none of the advertisements are engaging enough. I just don't buy it. I even as a creative guy, I think creative goes a long way and it can definitely grab your attention. And there's been a few times where I'm fast-forwarding through a TV commercial, and I'm like, what did I just see? And I wind back. But that behavior didn't make me stop and say, well, I'm going to sit through all the commercials now just in case one of them is really stellar and jumps out at me.
And, you know, Craig, you bring up some interesting points, and it certainly got me thinking about, you know, we've talked, you know, before about how this affects businesses and brands, but what we haven't talked a lot about is how it affects, you know, the actual end user, the consumer in this case. And, you know, you were talking about some of the behaviors that, you know, that you become accustomed to in terms of seeing something, rewinding back. But what is the landscape going to look like over the next couple months when some of these websites that have thrived off of display ads as being able to keep up, what happens when that goes away? Do those sites disappear? And does the end consumer then start to suffer because of something that they believe that they've always wanted, which is don't show me ads, but then a lot of the online content that they've been viewing, that they've become accustomed to, suffers because it can't exist without that revenue that comes in. So I think that's certainly an interesting part of this, and I wonder will it come to a point where a decision has to be made? Will they decide we can only block ads up to this point, or will only block or will give users decisions whether or not to do that?
So I'm reminded of a really interesting experiment that happened, you know, like 30 years ago. I remember this still from when I was a child. CBS Sports did an NFL football broadcast where they didn't have announcers because the consensus at that time was the announcers. This is the era of Howard Cosell, that people were sick of the announcers. They just wanted to watch the game. They didn't want to hear these guys jabbering in the background the whole time. So they did this experiment where they said, okay, here is an announcer-free broadcast. And I remember watching it with my dad, and it was a very different experience because there weren't those announcers. And, I mean, as we know today, announcers are a thing. So clearly it was a failed experience. So as much as people said, I don't want those announcers. I don't want them. You know, I can see the game. I don't need to hear the play-by-play. When it was removed, they found out that actually they did want it. Now, that said, I don't believe that if digital advertising went away tomorrow, that people would be like, you know what I really miss when I'm watching, when I'm reading Reddit ads? I really wish there were more digital ads.
Yeah. Pop-ups specifically.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Boy, I'm going, this page is loading quickly.
But
I can't keep up.
And it's sort of be careful what you wish for, right, in some of those cases. But to go to your point, it's maybe it's not ads, maybe it's native content. Right, so all of a sudden, Thrillist, I think, is one of the more popular ads that are sites that have ads and native content. Right.
Well, so, yeah, define native advertising.
So,
for us.
So for folks that don't know, native advertising is articles, content from advertisers that is dressed up like an article. So, for example, this piece could be about top five breakfast choices by Kellogg's. And it says Kellogg's, but kind
number
of
five, bacon. Number four, bacon. Number three.
No, they're all
bacon.
Actually cornflakes. So. Oh,
right.
And so you read through it, and it's actually engaging content, right? It kind of makes sense. It tells you got to eat your grains and your fiber and, you know, your fruit and all that kind of stuff.
It's usually written by the
correct,
you know, actual editorial team, right?
Right. Yeah. So in this case, they say, well, Kellogg's wants to jump on, but they want to promote their cereal, but they want to do it in so not a hit you over the head type fashion, right, where it's like buy cornflakes. Here's the picture of the box, and here's a person enjoying it. It's more like educating you that this is part of a healthy breakfast and so on and so forth. So I think the ad part might disappear, but the fact that you still know about Kellogg's cornflakes is still going to be in some form or fashion on that website.
Well, and another be careful what you wish for aspect is these outlets still need revenue. So if they can't generate it through advertising, they're going to generate it through other models. So that may include subscription-based models. You know, by and large, subscription-based content services online haven't really been that successful except for a few standouts.
Like New York Times. You know,
right.
You just can't just stroll up to their website and take a gander. You gotta have a subscription, right?
Exactly. But, you know, if all ads went away tomorrow and suddenly you had to put in your credit card number for all your favorite websites, I think, Eric, to your point, it would be a very different viewing experience that I don't think would be welcome.
I think if we talk about the trends for 2016, one of the sort of elephants in the room, if you will, is the fact that 2016 is a political year. And
the elephant and the elephant.
See that?
That's really what you're
the
doing.
Elephant and the donkey in the room.
That's right. Well, it took you guys a little bit longer.
Walking to a bar.
Parties.
Yeah.
And one is, all right, go on.
Yeah. But no, it's you know, at ThunderTech HQ, right? We have we have the RNC coming, so that's a huge
coming to Cleveland, right?
Correct. Yep. Yeah, it's a huge thing in this market, and it happens that Ohio's a swing state. We tend to flip flop, I guess, on who we're going to vote for, and especially now with no incumbent, that means that political candidates from both parties are going to be throwing lots and lots of money into this market to basically get your vote. And, you know, that's true across the country, right? So let's just say for this example, it's Bernie Sanders of Fox News fame. And, whoever they decide, Trump, right? So he's speaking of topical, right? So let's say it's Trump versus Sanders, right? They're going to start... they're going to start pumping money into these markets to make you make a decision. So what does that do to the local Honda dealer who's been loyal to that TV station for, let's just say 10 years?
Yeah.
And suddenly can't get his ad placed.
Or that spot that was $30 is now $200 a spot. Right. So we've been talking about this since 2015 early, is, start your planning now. We're at the beginning of the year, so the earlier you can plan things and get things in there before the politicians come in and sort of invade your home state, that's a major component and something as marketers are watching out for.
Well, I think what your team did for a couple of clients, looking at leverage and multi-year buys, which clearly is too late today for, but I'd say marketers that are in these swing states, what a great time to be forced into checking out other avenues, right? So if you always use broadcast,
right,
radio or TV, you're clearly going to be pushed out of that element this fall and the summer. What a great time to try out other right. methods.
And if you do still want to stick with broadcast or cable or one of those mass media things and you can still get in and you're willing to pay the price, that's fine. But from the user perspective, are you just so worn out by hearing, you should do this and you should do that and you should not believe this and not believe that. Oh, by the way, here's the ad for, the Camry. And back to, political ads back and forth. Right. There's just so much
noise.
Decision fatigue of like deciding what you want to do. And that's, that's a piece of what's in the user's mind.
So I think to bring this all home, it's easy to think, as a marketer, that the sky's falling, that things are changing, that it's becoming more difficult to advertise. And in some ways, that's true. But this is no different than what's happened in the past century in advertising and marketing across the world. Things have changed, right? The way people consume their information is constantly evolving. And obviously, advertising has never gone away. That smart marketers, which we like to believe we are smart marketers, we evolve, we educate our clients, and we direct them into more efficient and financially responsible ways to get their message out.
Well said, Craig.
Yeah.
And all right. All else fails, we have skywriting.
Oh, yes.
Mm. It's coming back big 2016.
That's right.
I'm predicting that now. All right, so that's Thundercast for this week. As always, if you like what you hear, you can subscribe to our broadcast. You can find it on Stitcher and iTunes. And wherever fine podcasts are sold, if you want to go direct to the source, go to thundertech.com/podcast, where you can find this podcast and every single podcast we have ever done. And that extends back into the early 80s, I believe, that when we first started our podcast before anyone even knew what podcasts were.
Yeah.
So special thanks to Jason Therian, JP Cranes, a special guest, Eric Krylo. This is Craig Israel signing off. We'll catch you next week.